Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. It's Insight number 89. Apologies for the sound quality last week. I have blamed my wife. She was on iPlayer in the background using up all my bandwidth, but things should be sorted out this today. With me, I have...
Rafe Blanford.
And...
Ewan Spence. I'm back. I survived.
Oh, joy. Unbounded joy. Ewan's back.
Woohoo.
That doesn't sound genuine.
We have news, we have stuff, which is a technical term we use here at the All About Symbian offices, and we have some reader questions. There's plenty to talk about. Just kick off briefly, with, for sake of completeness, with the Nokia N86 version 20 firmware is out, by my calculations, a week or so early, but I'm not complaining. One of the Nokia product guys in our forum comments did comment that the sheer number of product codes and versions and language variants across the world does mean that these rollouts do tend to take a matter of time, typically days or even weeks. So I know it's frustrating for some people out there listening to this not being able to get the very latest version, but it is coming, honestly. And we're also expecting the N97 version 20 firmware, don't forget, imminently. My gut feel is around sometime in next week. So that's very much to look forward to. Just briefly, the N86 version 20 brings improved photo quality, although it was all pretty darn good beforehand. There's the big thing, I guess, is that there's now a face detection added, and it seems to work quite well, judging from the example screenshots of Mr. Blanford in his kitchen. There's also red eye removal added, that is rather fiddly. There's much improved macro photography. I was very frustrated with the previous firmware not being able to photograph anything below about 15 centimetres, and you can now go down to about 6 or 7 centimetres, which is good. And there are a whole raft of fixes to Web, Music Store, Real Player, Obby Maps, Here and Now, Engage Client, Nokia Messaging. There's new shortcuts on the home screen, which you can take off if you want to. There's a new Obby Services splash screen when you start up to, and a new section in the startup wizard, I believe, to give new users a real sense of what Obby can do and all the different services. And there's a new Obby Store client, and there's an initial option when the customer first boots up the N86, they get the option to check for software updates there and then. So if they've bought their device off a shelf and it's been sitting there for 2 months, when they first boot it up, it will give them the option of going online and grabbing any updates, which I think is a really good move. Rafe, did you install version 20?
I did install version 20. It was over the air, just under 8 megabytes, and the process went very smoothly. It's actually one of the larger over the air updates I've done, but I was certainly impressed by this. And obviously the big one here is really face detection. And although in some senses people go, what's the point of that? It's really a case of letting you take more photos sort of a higher quality without really having to think about it, because obviously with face detection, what happens, as you explained to me last week, is that it will then focus on the face rather than anything else, and you get a better picture as a result. The software can actually detect up to 10 faces in any one photo, although obviously it will focus onto one place. The other thing that I think is worth pointing out here is this is going to be a feature that's pretty much unique to the N86, at least for the time being, because of devices currently available on the market, it's the only one with the sort of specialist imaging chipset, which allows it to do the extra processing required to do automatic face recognition. So again, I think it's a good example of the way the N86 is ahead of some of the other devices, because it's really a specialized imaging device, and it really does stand out because it does take some fantastic images. And this device, you know, has grown on me over time. When we first reviewed it, we said it was a spiritual success to the N95. It is that, but it's also a bit more in the imaging department. I think it's really the spiritual successor to both the N95 and the N82, and it's a marriage that I think is very attractive to some people, even if it doesn't seem to have quite the kudos of, you know, some of the touchscreen devices. You know, it's an incredibly good device.
Yeah, it's also the incredibly good video device. They claim to have improved the video quality. I've yet to test this because I use it for recording my phone show, but if you watch the next phone show, you'll be able to judge for yourself just how much better that is as well. It's also worth noting that there are still some defects. There's a fairly lengthy comment thread on the site, and things like theme effects don't work properly. But so far, most of the things I've come across are minor and certainly not showstoppers, but the Nokia representative did say that there is certainly another maintenance release on the way, although I expect it to be much, much smaller and certainly not 8 megabytes over the air. because that is coming. But in the meantime, I'm going to switch to the N86 as my main device for a few weeks and really hammer this this new firmware.
One of the interesting things, just to go back to that, is that, oh, not everybody's got access to the firmware yet, is I wonder what people would prefer. Would people prefer to have the firmware as soon as they can get it, or to wait for until everybody else in the world can get it? Because if they were, the firmware updates and the process of finding all the bugs that are going to be in such a complex project would add another 3 or 4 months onto the schedule of releasing the firmware. So I do sympathize with the people saying, oh, why can't you wait? Why don't I have it yet? I think there's actually a very good business case when you actually come down to it, to getting it out to a good couple of 100,000 users first to do the trial. So when it goes out to more people, those bug fixes have just been very slightly tweaked.
No, I think that's right. And you have to look at the practicality issue here, is that the N86 has a great number of variants. Now, some of them are actually necessary variants in terms of differences between what you get between markets, maybe in bundled applications or in language variants, and some of them are the result of operator customization, and typically the operator customization falls behind. But also from the point of view of the back end required to support this sort of thing with firmware over the air, having everyone update at the same time would probably be somewhat problematic in terms of resources. It would be possible to do, but I think we'd probably have to bear in mind that for the number of people that are obsessing about the new firmware coming out and want to get it as soon as possible, is only a fraction of the customer base, even with a high-end device like the N86. And so for all the complaints about this, I can't say I'm terribly sympathetic. Yes, I get frustrated when I've got one of the devices that can't upgrade the firmware, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, a week or a few weeks difference doesn't make a great deal of difference. So I think a bit of patience is sometimes required. Easy to say, I know, but I'd rather that Nokia invested the money in actually making changes and ensuring that there are as many updates as possible than perfecting the release process so everyone could get it at the same amount of time, when it's probably just, you know, in the order of a few tens of thousands of people who get frustrated by this thing versus the, you know, 100,000, millions of people that will own devices.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Moving on, Ovi Maps, this is the Ovi Maps on the web, currently has just been updated with what's called good things. This is yet more proof that I was light years ahead of my time when I introduced Mapper in 1995. User-generated points of interest have come to Ovi Maps on the web, and I presume, Rafe, that if you want to explain a bit more about this, also that they'll also be coming to the mobile in terms of syncing down to that.
Yes, I would have thought that this will sort of come as part of the Ovi Sync that's already built into the Ovi Maps application. At the moment, as you say, it is just web only, and I think this is a way of essentially, it's, as you say, user-generated points of interest, but you can share them with anybody. So when you add them to the map, everybody can see them. And as we know, Nokia acquired a company called Places earlier in the summer. And that's sort of a kind of combination of social network, geotagging, and seeing where your friends are, you know, kind of that kind of mashup between location and social, which is what Nokia is very strongly basing its future strategy on. So this is where I would expect Places to sort of be integrated in the future. And this is probably just an experiment to see how it goes. And certainly on the evidence so far, quite a few people have been adding, adding good things to Ovi Maps. I've seen people adding good bars, good shops, etc., etc. And I've added a few of my own. It is very early days on this yet, so it's not terribly impressive compared to some of the things you can do on Google Maps and customization. That said, it has been done in a very user-friendly way. It's just drag and drop and then fill in a form and you basically, that's it. But yes, as you say, this will come onto mobile in due course. And I would actually expect it to happen probably on the next major update of Ovi Maps, where they'll be looking to change the framework around a little bit to support some of the new things going forwards in terms of the apps on maps. That's the Ovi SDK. And it wouldn't surprise me at all to see this as kind of a Nokia-sponsored apps on maps as part of the update to Ovi Maps sometime in the next few months.
Yeah, talking of extending Ovi Maps, Nokia also, in addition to buying Places, they also bought last week Doppler. Now, I have no idea what Doppler is, but Ewan's kind of an expert on this. What can people expect to see from Ovi Maps in, say, 6 months' time with Doppler on board, Ewan?
Well, the interesting thing is we're not quite sure, because it's like, well, first of all, Doppler is a very small internet company which is started up about 2 or 3 years ago now, by an ex-Nokia employee and Matt Biddulph. And I can actually remember Matt demoing me the very first version of Doppler when the server was actually on his laptop back at an O'Reilly event a couple of years ago. Essentially, you get to tell Doppler where you're traveling and who your friends are. And the initial goal that Matt had was it would tell you when people are visiting another conference, so you could have serendipitous meetings, like the sort of feeling you get when you just go into a bar and you go, wow, you're here, I didn't expect you to see here. Doppler was meant to help facilitate that.
So, and kind of like the interactive version of Ewan's Filofax.
It's something like that, yes. And I just for the record, Steve mentioned that, not I. I'm still on two for the year. But what it's grown up into something that allows you to, for example, track your carbon footprint. It's created a great big social network. It's got a wonderfully tight sense of community. And I think Nokia's purchase of Doppler, the story is that Doppler were actually looking for a little bit more of a financing round. And Nokia just went, ah, no, we'll take the whole thing. So I think we'll start to see that certainly the knowledge of the guys behind it slowly filtering into OV Maps and also into the community building that's going on as well. And, you know, you've got things that do points of interest. You've now got a way to analyze people's relationships as they travel. It's just like it's like another small building block. I don't think we will have a point where a switch will suddenly happen and OV Maps will be Doppler enabled. What I think we'll see that knowledge go into the features as we go forward, and it will be put into the roadmap over the next 6 to 12 months on OV Maps. But eventually, I think we will see all the Doppler functionality. But it's important to point out that the Doppler site still works, continues to work, and I suspect it's had a huge influx of members over the last 5 days.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair comment, Ewan. I think the interesting thing here is Nokia identified it as something called a social atlas, and Doppler themselves are referred to them by that kind of name as well. And the important thing here, for me at least, is the metadata that goes along with people sharing their information. Because once you get a certain level of sharing, you'll start seeing commonalities in the data and are able to identify interesting places and interesting trends, like the popular hotels that people stay in, what restaurants they like eating in, what cafes they hang out in. And that kind of information can be very valuable in terms of recommendations. I think the other thing that's important here, this is also about context-sensitive information. And we often talk about location being a valuable for providing context as to where you are now. But in some ways, context of where you're going to be in the future is even more valuable, because it allows your device or services to provide information based on where you'll be in the future. And as you had mentioned, the serendipitous meeting thing. So I think that will probably be just a bigger role in acquiring Doppler. For Nokia at least, I think some of the changes you might expect to see, rather than using Google Maps as its maps provider, we'll probably see it switch over to the Ovi Maps Player API in due course. And again, my suspicion would be that I wouldn't be surprised to see Doppler functionality get into Ovi Maps as some kind of apps on maps functionality, whereby you're able to update the Doppler from your phone based on, you know, an application within Maps. There's still some uncertainty around how this apps on Maps will actually be presented to the user, but imagine, you know, you're on the plane or something, you'll be able to add that information, probably not on the plane given there's no network signal, but maybe at the airport.
Well, you never know nowadays.
The GPS. So I think it's a interesting acquisition, but I suspect there's also a certain amount of this is in the area that Nokia is looking at very actively in terms of social location and context and how this all fits together. So there's probably a certain element of hiring the talent of Doppler as well, and a lot of the Doppler people at the senior level, some of them are ex-Nokia. I think it's a chief designer, for example, out of Nokia, founded Doppler and is now presumably going back into Nokia. So there's probably also an element of talent as opposed to the technology and the ideas. But as Ewan says, it's going to continue as it is going forward. But I would expect it to be rolled into sort of the service portfolio at some point. Quite how that will happen remains to be seen.
Yeah,
that would be Marco Artusari, who was the CEO of Doppler. He's just been appointed the head of Nokia design. There we go. Oh, his dad was also the former president of Finland. So, you know, nothing like
fascinating facts.
Yes. Didn't miss this.
So some analysts have been giving Nokia just no hope again. For example, they've been saying, oh, well, Obi Maps, it just pales into comparison with Google Maps. And I'm sure Nokia have still got quite a way to go. And with these extra acquisitions and increases in functionality, there's clearly further for them to go. I think people also, despite the fact that Google Maps is free, they miss the fact that Nokia Maps, or Obi Maps in its basic form, was also free and included already installed on millions after millions after tens of millions of Series 40 and S60 devices being sold. And I did the calculations this morning at 2 per second, 24 hours a day, all around the world. So that's an awful lot of momentum. I still think, and I'm going to return to this in an editorial on the site next week, I still think that it's too early to predict the demise of Nokia or the demise of Symbian.
Just a little.
Anyway, watch the site for that. Now, last weekend, I gather there was a holodeck conference going on in London, Ewan was the guy in charge, and this major holodeck conference, presumably everybody dressed up as Trekkies, Nokia and Symbian turned up. But anything of note, guys?
Yes, it wasn't a holodeck conference. It was over the year.
I know.
But just for the listeners, I did not dress up as a Trekkie. Thank you very much. I would dress up as a colonial warrior. Nobody did, no. Lots of people. We had two people who dressed up as Cybermen because they really were Cybermen. And I did produce them from a holodeck that I built. But there were 25 other projects that had been built overnight on mobile phone using mobile technology. And throughout both days, there were seminars going on, both from Nokia and from Symbian Foundation, but also from people like Vodafone, people like OMAP, and so on. Generally, it was pitched as 36 hours of mobile development. And Rafe popped up as well halfway through. And I think, Rafe, it was the first time at an event where I was there where you could relax because you didn't have to control me.
Yeah, no, I wasn't in charge. But the thing that caught my eye over the air was some of the projects that were going on, in particular Project Bluebell from Future Platforms. Did you get a chance to see that?
Oh, this is Tom Hume's one, yeah?
That's right.
Oh, this was... Now, last year, they'd made Octobastard, which was an eight-legged AI-powered spider. You thought I was bad. This year, they decided to do something a little bit more beautiful. What they had was they had a program that composed music by looking at Bluetooth signals. So they put four phones in the corner of the hall, analyzing all the Bluetooth patterns. And from that, they created a symphony of music. And that also powered a version of Conway's Game of Life on the screen as well. To create this sort of wonderful transcendental, chilled piece of music from all the technology in the room. If we didn't like the music, people just got up and moved their phones. It was beautiful. Absolutely no, well, I say absolutely no practical benefit, but I'm sitting there going, well, can I have the code, please? So it was just lovely. It's like people tinkering around with phones. You know, they've had their day jobs, they've done all their PHP, they've done all the integration of social networks and stuff. It's just a chance to let their hair down and just do stuff that was fun for them. So we had that. We had Bottle Rocket, which turned an Apple iPhone into a Rock Band style ocarina, in which, you know how when you blow on a bottle, it makes a noise? They put three iPhones together over Bluetooth to create a bottle-blowing Rock Band-style rhythm game. That was fun. Now, I think you had all the stuff going on as well. I mean, we're going on about the fun stuff there. But it also went into quite a bit of depth as well, but a whole bundle of areas in terms of network support. There was a lot of talk about widgets. The future is widgets and app stores. Forget everything else seemed to be the message that many people were picking up. And lots of people that... You know, from various levels, I mean, we had David Wood there, and right down to grunt coders, and people were just popping in because they thought it would be a good laugh to find out what was going on with phones.
Yeah, so in terms of some of the presentations that caught my eye, I think the first one I'll mention is Scott Weiss from the Symbian Foundation was talking about open source and user experience, and this was the way that the Symbian Foundation is looking to call on outsiders to sort of comment on the existing UI and the UX of Symbian Symbian 5th edition, whatever we want to call it these days. And this is the blog that's running, which is soliciting user contributions and user feedback about the way that the UI could be improved. And we'll include the URL in the show notes. But particularly caught my attention was the fact that from this blog, which was sort of designed as a way to gather some informal feedback, there's actually two contributions have come in that will actually change the way things work on Symbian going forward. And one of these is in the dialer application. At the moment, the dialer application on 5th edition only has numbers on the keypad, and yet in the future it's also going to have the alphabetic letters as well. So the sort of on the 2 key you get ABC, and previously this was missing. And you know, this is an issue if you're trying to enter obviously some letters in, which might be if you're using alphabet-based dialing, but also when you first start up the device and you have to put in AM or PM, which at the moment you just have to look at the keys and sort of kind of remember you need to press 2 for AM and 7 for PM. So that's good to see. Perhaps the more interesting one from Ixonos is a contribution that is looking at changing the way that single and double clicking work on 5th edition, with the idea being to try and get rid of double clicking altogether. That's in things like lists, bits of the UI. And there's a full user contribution that's gone in, and together with Noki Ixonos are going to be working on contributing that to the Symbian Foundation. So it's a great example of the Symbian Foundation's openness in action, and the way that companies who are part of the Symbian Foundation, or even from the outside, can contribute source code in to actually change things for real in the operating system. And of course, that's a very big departure from the centrally control thing we've had in the past. So we're going to write this up on the site in due course, and we'll hopefully have a chance to talk to Scott as well and ask him to explain in a bit more detail. But that's certainly a great example of some of the changes that the Symbian Foundation has brought. I think the other thing that caught my eye was the talk by some of the guys from Qt, which of course was acquired by Nokia and is now Qt Development Frameworks. And they were talking about how Qt fits into Nokia's future vision. And this was really about making life easier for developers. Now, Ewan, I know you were in this presentation. What did they say about the existing sort of frame of doing things in Symbian C++ and with the existing Symbian SDKs? Were they kind about the ease of use there?
Well, where Symbian is easy to use, they were kind. Unfortunately, Symbian is notorious as having its own peculiar dialect of C, which makes it very difficult. The presentation itself was given by Pekka Kosonen of Nokia, and where are we here? Things to draw out. First of all, Symbian C++ is not going away. To get access to some of the higher functions of the phone, to some of the stuff that's already under behind the security certificates, you will still need Symbian C++. So people who've learned their ninja coding skills, we will still need you. They reckon that about 15% of code, all told, if you look to all the applications when everything is running, will still require Symbian native code in C++. But of course, the advantage of the Qt framework is that the Qt framework can call in those bits of code, so you don't have to write fully in it. There's a much better explanation from Sandro van der Waal on the comments in our story on this one, so I'm just going to quote from that. With Symbian 9.1, you can program the non-UI parts in standard C++, but not the UI parts. So you still need to know a lot of Symbian C++ to become productive. Combining C++ in the engine and C++ in UI needs the adaption layer, and that's where Qt comes in. And Qt allows you to jump in and build that in standard C++, and it does all the nasty changing and everything and puts it through. In other words, it makes it faster, it makes it easier to maintain, and that means that hopefully it's going to be much more attractive to developers. And of course, Qt is cross-platform as well, and a lot of people are already using the language. One of the things that Nokia pointed out was that the sort of opinion that they were getting back from the developers was, get your house in order, once things change, we can talk again, which was a direct quote from one of their slides at this presentation. So they decided, after looking around, the easiest way to do that was to purchase Trolltech, get Qt, get this application framework layer in place, and, you know, shunt aside things like Avcon, which is used to make up the UI at the moment, and bring it forward. I think they're incredibly realistic about people's perceptions of Symbian C++. They know what the problem is. They're happy to talk about the problem. They know that it's still one of the best mobile operating systems on the planet in terms of, you know, power usage, in terms of capabilities, in terms of stability. But it's, you know, there's a slight disconnect between the bottom levels and the higher levels. The Qt framework is going to be the glue that joins that together. And it also looks quite sparkly in the UI as well.
And I think the interesting thing here about Symbian C++ and Qt, the problem really with Symbian C++ in one sense is that it allows you to go to a much lower level than you typically can with Android or with the iPhone. It, you know, really is true native development, and it lets you get right down into the innards of the phone. Of course, that inevitably means it's more complex than the offerings on Android and iPhone. And one of the reasons for the dialect of Symbian C++, apart from the sort of the legacy components coming through, is that complexity actually needs something that's a bit more difficult in order to have it optimized for mobile in terms of power management and memory management. And that's going to remain true going forward, even though we are expecting to see more memory available. Power is still going to be an issue. But even memory is, you know, you're going to be running Symbian on some phones that don't have a lot of memory. And so what it does is really, what you have there then is how can you improve it? And what Nokia are really doing here is taking a three-pronged approach. And there's a good reason for this. It's partly they're also increasing their number of platforms, and we've talked about MIMO, and they're also doing Windows with the booklet device. So going forward, what they're doing is increasing the number of platforms they have as they increase the reach of their portfolio. And so the possibility of doing everything across a single platform just isn't really there, and there's a good debate to be had about whether it's even possible to have a single platform serving a great range of devices, right from the low end through the mid tier up to the high end, and then there's more experimental stuff that's been going on with MIMO. And so Nokia said their strategy going forward is effectively to have a three-layered approach. On the top, you've got the Ovi services, which can be addressed via programmable APIs, and that's largely going to be done through web-based technology. And on the sort of second layer, you've got the apps layer, if you like, and that's powered via Qt and also web runtime. And both of these will also be used to sort of address the overlying service APIs for Ovi, although they can be addressed externally via, you know, from web pages and other technology. But because web runtime is based on web technology, it can be used to address the APIs. Indeed, many of the Ovi APIs will be built on top of web runtime effectively. But that, what's important to note there is it's cross-platform. So it won't just work on Symbian, it will also work on MIMO, Windows Mobile, and other platforms of the future. But also it means that a developer can create an application that they may initially target for Symbian, but will be able to transport it over to MIMO and to other Qt-enabled platforms, and that's Windows, Mac OS X, many of the Linux distributions as well. So there's a big difference there. And the third layer is the platform layer, and that's what we think of as we have today, Symbian OS or MIMO or Windows Mobile. Windows Desktop, and all of those can be programmed natively. And the advantage of Qt is it can actually, as you said, Ewan, call on those lower layers if necessary to, you know, do more complex things with an application. So you get the advantage of Qt even when you're creating a more complex application. So that three-tiered approach effectively means you have three ways of addressing a platform, each of which is slightly more abstracted than the other. And at the bottom, you've got C++ or Symbian C++, which, as you say, the Ninja Warriors will still be able to code with. And that's, as Ewan termed it, the samurai sword. Next up, you've got Qt and web runtime. And as Ewan said, that's the butter knife. That's easier to use. It's more comparable to the development level on something like the iPhone or Android. You can't do everything with it, but you will be able to do most things with it. And then the APIs on the top, and they're sort of a third layer, because they can be addressed both by the layer below, but also externally on the web. And the idea here, Nokia's basic, you know, reason for doing this is to put developers closer to the money. And they want to make it easier for developers to make money. And they know that in order to do that, the difficulty with sort of programming and the tools and things like that has to go away. And you have the technical base. And of course, on the other side of the coin is the Ovi Store, which is the route to market, removing some of the barriers for commercializing an application. So it's quite a detailed chat there about what Nokia's development strategy is going forward. And I thought in this presentation it was very cogently delivered and presented this is what's going forward. And certainly the developers I've spoken to are quite optimistic about this, although it's worth noting very strongly that a lot is down to the execution. And while we'll see the first version of Qt for Symbian coming out, or the first full version that's available now as a technology preview in November, of course in Symbian 2 it will be included, as it will be in Symbian 3. Symbian 4 of course sees the big change where the actual UI level Avcon will be replaced with something that's Qt based or Orbit and Direct UI. There's details on the site to that, we'll link to that as well. So Qt is going to be playing a very important role going forward, and I think savvy developers will start looking at this now, with the caveat that Symbian C++ will still be around for a long time to come.
And for those keeping track of the analogies there, we had the samurai sword, we had the butter knife, and I think we're still waiting for the analogy for that top layer, Rafe. So you can be thinking of something that's not quite so sharp.
It's probably the palette knife or something like that. Liberally is spread everywhere and all over the internet. That's good enough.
Did you have anything else on this subject?
Yeah, I think the main thing to point out is that Nokia aren't leaving behind the rest of the technology. Their focus is going to be on Qt and web runtime. And they said that whenever new things come out, for example, an API for an OVI service, they will always feature in Qt and web runtime first as a matter of priority. Things like Flash and Java, they will appear in due course. But if you're wanting to play with the latest toys, the toys that Nokia are putting as close as possible to the source to do as quickly as possible are going to be Qt and web runtime. And it's actually an interesting observation made by somebody else. It's like, you know, in the next 6 to 9 months, they think it's going to be very hard, once these all come into play, to differentiate between an application that's using web runtime in its appearance and an application that is going to be running as native under Qt, because at that point it just becomes, it does something.
Yeah, it's the same old story with applications. Consumers don't care how it works, they just care that it works, and Qt has some quite complex style sheet type behavior for describing the look and feel of an application. It's actually one of his advantages in a cross-platform environment. But you're quite right about Flash and also things like PythonU, and they're still going to be around. And I think Flash in particular is worth highlighting, because that's in one sense a really true cross-platform thing, but it's abstracted at a higher level and you can't do everything in Flash, you know, Qt in particular. And web runtime going forward, at least, not at the moment, will probably be able to, web runtime may be the equal of Flash. Qt will allow considerably more complexity. It has a lot more built into its libraries for things like database and multimedia beyond what Flash does. I mean, Flash is still a very powerful tool, but Flash may be more cross-platform in the sense that it will run on a lot more devices, whereas Qt and web runtime are going to be sort of Nokia-specific platforms, albeit with the caveat that Qt does run on other platforms, where Flash is trying to deliver the promise of sort of write once, run anywhere, and is probably closest to delivering that in some ways, at least.
Yeah. So having promised at the start of this insight that we'd have news, stuff, and reader questions, we seem to have run out of time without even getting on to stuff and reader questions. So what we're going to do is hold those on for show Insight 90. Just a reminder that about 3.5 weeks' time now, as we record this, at the end of the month, there is SEE 2009, which is Symbian's annual show. It's been renamed again, but everything is still absolutely free. Anyone can attend. All you've got to do is go on their site, enter your details, and you can invite. I believe you could probably turn up on the day, fill in the same form, and also get in. Rafe, are we any closer yet to an event on the night before?
I haven't got any more details for people just at this time.
But do, because we've got a great idea of what we could do, haven't we, guys?
Have we? Okay. squeeze that.
Got a great idea.
Right, we'll squeeze that out of Ewan and give you all the details on the site in the next week, we promise. In the meantime, though, that is it for Insight 89. It's goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
Goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
And goodbye from me, Ewan Spence.